This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of every Premier League match week and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earl, and here are the topics for today's episode. Thiago Silva sees red as West Brom put five past Chelsea. Diogo Jota comes off the bench to lead Liverpool past the ever inconsistent Arsenal. Spurs throw it away late again at St James's Park. Dean Henderson starts in 2-1 win against Brighton. Trezeguet hurts Fulham's chances of Premier League survival. Man City move one step closer to their third Premier League title under Pep. And a quick look back at Sergio Aguero's Man City legacy. That's what we've got coming up in today's show.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Dietz & Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz & Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, Bill, there's a lot of topics there, mate.
A lot of work, my friend.
A lot of work, a lot of games, a lot of notes, a lot of stories.
Yeah. That's why we love it.
The shock came at Stamford Bridge, Robbie. I mean, wow. Who saw this coming? Chelsea 2, West Brom 5.
Yeah.
Just quickly, I looked at the lineup, Rob, and I see Christian Pulisic making a start in his perfect position in this system under Tuchel, just one of those number 10s in behind Werner, playing alongside Ziyech. Maybe some of the other guys weren't ready after international travel. Some are being rested for the Champions League game on Wednesday versus Porto. But my first kind of thought on the game, Rob, is that, wow, they looked off. The passing looked off. All the drama of all the West Brom goals, the passing, the simple passing, the sharpness, the usual possession dominance wasn't there at the start. And it's just an indicator that, listen, you know, interesting afterwards, Robert Tuchel saying that we learned some lessons and I learned a lesson. This is the Premier League and you can't afford to maybe coast or think you can win games without earning the right to win them. And they got a real bloody nose on this one, mate.
Yes, and I think that's a really important point you make. There's two things that this is out for me, Rob, that international breaks, I think, you know, Chelsea are a multi-diverse squad with people all over the world. And, you know, there's been Euro qualifiers, there's been World Cup qualifiers, people away scoring, travelling. And when you get players back, sometimes 2 or 3 days at most before a weekend game, and obviously Chelsea with the early kickoff, sometimes I think players' heads are in different places, and you've got to be able to bring that back together and say, right, we're back in the Premier League now. I think when you talk about Tuchel, it was really interesting that maybe at Dortmund, and was it Mainz he was at in Germany there, you can play certain games and, you know, coast to it to result because of who you are and you've got the quality. Maybe at PSG, we know their quality is enough that they can find a way and league and win a game when they're not at the best. You come in the Premier League, Musto, and you play West Bromwich Albion, you play Sheffield United. I'm talking about the teams. You play Fulham, you play Newcastle United and catch them on a day when they sniff that you're not quite right and you will get beat. And the big point, you know, the five goals is up was obviously the headline. But I thought you hit the point when I was working on the game with Bex and I said, I can't remember under Tuchel them giving the ball away as cheaply, as easily as it did in the game. It was the basis of how West Bromwich Albion got into the game. And let's remember, Chelsea did go 1-0 up in this. See, the Thiago Silva sending off had a bearing. But they were 1-0 up but couldn't keep the ball. Jorginho and Kovacic were invisible Kovacic in terms of
Kovacic, I think, in terms of protection, Kovacic was plugging away and did a good job.
He was trying. Jorginho, I'm not quite sure what's happened to the guy who, under Sarri, was the passer, was the continuity. Looks lightweight, gives a ball away, looks less committed to it.
Listen, we talk a lot about possession and giving the ball away. It's undervalued, that side of the game. Now, Chelsea have been brilliant defensively.
Yeah.
But if you're in a situation, a game where you're giving the ball away or getting caught in possession, they're the most likely chances of seeing goals in any game of football. Mm. You either score goals through great possession and breaking down a team with your football, you score goals in set pieces, but mainly it's, you know, transition, the buzzwords right now, in turning over the ball. If you can force the opponents to do that, and you can press. That's why we see so many goals from pressing. And when Chelsea give the ball away, I think every goal, Rob, I think there was one goal that maybe wasn't, but from the red card to the vast majority of the West Brom goals, it was all about Chelsea giving the ball away.
Yeah.
Defenders and other players are in attacking mode positions, and they're caught out. And to be fair, and Big Sam said it afterwards, and he's kind of right, people are going to jump on what Chelsea didn't do. He said, don't have all that. It's about how good West Brom were. Yeah. And how good their finishing was. And to be fair, he's right. That was some very cool finishing. Mateus Pereira, Robbie Earl, I'll jump straight to it, is my underappreciated performer. Now, of course, he's going to be appreciated in this game. But fans that maybe don't see him play regularly, with this game, he's a little diamond of a player. He's got quality. We saw it in the two finishes, particularly his second goal. I mean, just to bring the ball back into the other corner, he's got real star quality, and Mateus Pereira. And if West Brom go down, which I still think they will, I'd love to see him in the Premier League. But maybe Mateus Pereira is a little bit underappreciated by the general Premier League fan. We saw it. And this is why we do this. In certain games, when these type of players have big performances, we pick them out because it's important to show people that it's not just about the big clubs and the big name players. There's a lot of good players in this Premier League. And some of them, you know, go under the radar a little bit. Pereira's one of them, and I thought he had a brilliant game.
Yeah, it's a good shout, because he came up from the Championship, good reputation, goals and assists in the West Brom team, and he's brought that again. And I remember I was watching them early in the season, Robin. It was Dean Garner, it was Pereira, and it was Callum Robinson. And we were saying, lively? That looks lively. If you can get enough ball to them, they can cause problems. And we haven't obviously seen Dean Garner. Robinson's been in and out the team, but Pereira's been the one. And wherever he plays, whether it's a right side, left side, or from a central position, he can affect a game. You're right. It's a really good call for Pereira. And some credit to Sam, because before the game, it was really interesting. It's been a weekend when our call to action was, give us three words what the Premier League mean to you. And Bex and I were talking. I was saying, you know, compared to even, we had an unpredictable, we had a dramatic, and we had unique. And I think that game alone gives you all the things. It's exactly what the Premier League's about. Now, from Chelsea's point of view, Rob, we can all have a bad day at the office. We all can have an off day. Maybe it was an off day. The worry a little bit about the possession, I think, is something that Tuchel want to address quite quickly and make sure they get back to business. They've got Champions League coming up. Slavia Prague, I think it is, they play. Sorry, that's in Europa. They've got Porto, I think, in the Champions League. Two games coming up on Wednesday. So they want to get back to action. They want to get back to clean sheets and defending well. So it's just interesting now, Rob, between now and the end of the season, there's some important games for Chelsea, FA Cup, Champions League, and obviously wanting to finish in that top four. Just a little test for Tuchel. Things have been going reasonably well without maybe a big scoring victory. You know, the undefeated since he's taken over. This was a little kind of warning about what the Premier League can do to you.
And a little reminder of where this team struggled a bit before, you know, with just some sloppy performances.
Under France.
Just a couple of moments, Rob, before we move on, that I think is worth a mention. First of all, for me, it was a correct call with Thiago Silva's second yellow card and the red card, Rob. Do you have any issues with the lunge?
No, there was a lot of contact there.
It looked worse than what it really was. I still think it was a yellow card.
I still think it's a yellow card. On its own, it's a yellow card, and you can't take into consideration that he's got one already, so I don't want to give it him. I thought it was, I mean, they gave bad possession away, and then he doesn't need to jump off his feet if he comes up and stands in front of him. The shot maybe gets the block in. So I didn't have any argument with that, whether other people did, but I think it was right. Another big talking point, Rob, and it's obviously a player that we're obviously very interested in his Chelsea career. Christian Pulisic got the start as in number 10 role, got the first goal, which was important in the game, important for him, because I think I said during the broadcast, you know, if he starts and he plays, he's got to be productive. Goals and assists, and he's got to put in performances that make it difficult for him to not. So he's got the goal first off. It wasn't a great first off for Chelsea, down a man and down a goal at 2-1. But then we saw the incident, Rob, that happened in the second half. So Mason Mount comes onto the pitch. Christian Pulisic is part of the team that runs out. And then we had a camera on Pulisic, and it showed him basically running 3 or 4 yards onto the pitch, turning around, going back to the sideline, the touchline, to the Tuchel and his coaching staff. And Tuchel confirmed after that Pulisic said he had a hamstring injury and that he would have to come off. He wasn't going to be able to play the second half. So emergency action, get Timo Werner back on, who was the player that was not going to start. Timo Werner comes on, Pulisic came off. Tuchel talked about it a little bit after his press conference. Didn't seem particularly happy about the situation, as you would expect. What did you make of it, Rob? What did you make of the whole situation? Well, what did you make of the Pulisic kind of, you know, where does this leave Christian Pulisic?
Well, the first of all thing, what I think is important to say, it's very easy to jump to conclusions, right? And I'm gonna give you my kind of thought on it. I would just say we've been doing this long enough now, Rob, to realize that we don't know what goes on when they run down that tunnel. You know, what I would say, and things happen, and I feel for him because it doesn't paint him in a good light. The reaction of Thomas Tuchel and the coaches around when Pulisic said he's got a problem was of real surprise.
Yeah.
Now, that's where I'm like, you know, I can understand it if the manager said, you know what, you've said something, give it the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, let's have a go. Yeah.
And he runs out initially and he's like, wow. Then they would say, oh, okay, it's not any good, is it? Okay. But there was a real surprise there, Rob. So I'm speculating that he didn't say anything or much at all at halftime to say, I think I might have a problem. And then carries on. I mean, could he have a twinge in his hamstring and the tiny work to run to the sideline? Well, he must have felt something and didn't say anything, Rob.
Okay, and I totally agree, because I think if you've got 15 minutes to kind of work on the hamstring, you probably go out a bit before the other guys. You have a little bit of run up and down with the fitness guy, and he says, you know, how are you feeling? Yeah. But my not issue, but my point would be, Rob, and I've been in this situation a couple of times where I felt something. I would have started the game and even go 5 or 10 minutes and go, okay, it's not good. Listen, I'm not right.
Start the second half, you mean?
Start the second half and go through 10 minutes and see. I don't get the running onto the pitch 3 or 4 yards. He wasn't even running at any pace.
I know.
So that bit I don't get. That bit doesn't quite seem right. And
anything, Rob, if I can interrupt there, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes with hamstring injuries, and I've had these, and probably you have as well, some hamstring injuries or pain comes from your back, low back, third pain. I had it all the time. My pelvis used to move a little bit, and I used to get referred pain in my hamstrings.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he sat down at 15 minutes, and he sat there, and he hadn't thought anything of it, Rob, and he's got up again, and again, I feel I don't think we should speculate. I'm just trying to give reasons.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at reasons of how it happened and what maybe, the situation.
He did, maybe he did the right thing. You know what? Maybe like get Timo back out, or like, I shouldn't go on. I could make my injury worse. I could affect the result of Chelsea Football Club. I mean, it didn't.
I hit all that from a medical point of view and a personal point of view. And I think I remember saying to Rebecca, the first thing I'm going to say is the last thing you want with a hamstring or a bad injury is to go out and play and make it worse. So maybe it did the right thing. But what I would say, Rob, and you made the point about it, and we've seen players in our careers. We know of players played with teammates and friends we know. There is some players who get in, who have the reputation like, oh, he's one of those, you can't rely on him. The look on Tuchel's face and the look on his coaching staff's face, I think, is a bigger worry than the injury. Mm. It looked to me like a bit, oh, here we go. What is it now? And that's...
Yeah, it's unfair on him, isn't it?
But
again, like sometimes coaches expect you to sometimes play through it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's the right thing to do. I think we'll move on, Rob, because it's very difficult to know the situation there. We'll see if he's okay for the next game, whether he has got something, Rob. I mean, if he's okay to train again and play in the next match.
Are you playing the Champions League before the Champions League this week?
Well, if it is, then obviously it wasn't anything to worry about and he should have got on there and played. But listen, it's something that I'm sure a lot of our listeners and that will be frustrated that are big fans of Christian Pulisic.
We all are. We want Christian Pulisic to do well. And
made in the position he wants to play, he gets his goal.
Yeah. It's just disappointing on for us, most of all, I'm sure, for Christian, who's worried about it. Let's move on to what I think was deemed as the big game of the weekend. And I thought it was one of those, probably one of the most difficult games to call, Rob, with an Arsenal team that, shown as the West Ham game is a perfect illustration of who they can be. Not great in one half, really good the second half. And it's a Liverpool team who kind of finding the way back to a bit of form, more away from home than at home, with Kabak and Phillips at the back and Fabinho back in midfield. It looks a little bit like they were getting to normal. But before this game, it was a tough one to call. And I probably just fancied Liverpool, but just, and thought that Arsenal would be in it. I couldn't have been further from the truth in terms of what we saw. And good win for Liverpool. I think confidence-building win. Diogo Jota we'll talk about separately. But I think the story coming from this game was Arsenal, Rob.
I mean, very, very passive, Rob. And you know, I get it. And I think Arteta, sometimes I'm watching Arsenal at the moment, we're seeing... When they're expansive and they feel they have to go for the game, they look at their best and they've looked really, really good and bright. Too much respect for Liverpool, too concerned with Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool do possess the ball well, but there's no real sense of pressing them. Nobody's pressing the defenders. Very much sitting back, allowing Liverpool to have this, at times, to be fair, slow possession. It took a while, didn't it? The first, you know, it wasn't much in the first half. It wasn't a great The goals came in the second half and Liverpool... You know, like Jurgen Klopp said, their football hasn't been awful. It's just that they've defensively been very weak, and the front players and the scorers haven't been doing the thing. They got the goals, which changes everything. It just, you know, Liverpool, they are different with the way they play right now with Thiago. Everything goes through him, so it's a little bit slower. So teams do have the opportunity to get behind the ball, which Arsenal did. But when they find a way through, and Arsenal had nothing really in response, it was concerning for Arsenal. I thought Mikel Arteta afterwards, Rob, was very strong on their performance and how disappointed he was. And it just goes back, you know, my last note on Arsenal is, it is what it is, Rob. They're a lot of players short. They're in the middle of making a lot of changes. All the players that went out in the last window, yes, some players have come in, but a lot of others need to come in. Arteta's got a difficult job. We've said that. It's just when you get games like this, it's just like, wow, they're a long way behind Liverpool's quality and abilities and players off the bench and a bit of a reality check for everybody. That's probably a wrong phrase. A reality check? They're already mid-table. It's just confirmation.
They're 10th in the table.
A reality check, a confirmation of where they are right now.
I think I've got to go a bit stronger. I think it, 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 I, I was I was seeing a few interviews after the game, and Mikel saying it's down on me and that, and something in me didn't like, okay, is that why are your team not? Why are your team not ready to play a big game against Liverpool? Why are your team against a Liverpool team that are not the team of last season, that weren't brilliant in the first half, that were playing kind of quite solidly, but not anything scintillating? Why doesn't your team turn up? Why on odd days do we see people? Why is it on those occasions that you can, when you're back to and you go a little bit expansive and you look like a good team? I don't like the blame me, it's my fault. That's your job, Mikel. That's your job. And part of your job being at Arsenal.
That's what he's saying. He's saying, yeah, blame me. It's my.
Yeah, and I get that. But I don't think that's an easy, like, oh, blame me. Let's forget about it. Blame you, but you're not. It shows you can't be doing your job properly. Or Callum Chambers. Is Rob Holding, is Gabriel, are they the future? Is that where we're going with this football club? Because if we are, then that's fine. Tierney coming off was a loss and an influence to the group. But there's still as many questions about Arsenal as before. Now, when you get the Arsenal job, Rob, it's one of the biggest jobs in Premier League football. It's one of the biggest jobs in Europe. And there must come a pressure that you have to win games. You have to develop. You have to grow. You have to obviously transition. But you've got to win some games. You've got to win some big games now and then to keep people on side. You've got to show progression. I just don't want there to be the, oh, it's okay, Mikel. It's part of the rebuild. We know, you know, don't worry about it. You don't worry about it if you maybe, you worry less about it if you're Brighton. You worry less about it if you're other teams. And we've seen Frank Lampard lose his job and Slaven Bilic lose his job. I just feel we've just got to be careful that we don't go, it's okay, Mikel, whatever you're going to do is okay. We know you're building, we know you're learning. I mean, starting next season, I think it's I think the meter turns differently.
Listen, I appreciate that. It's the forever kind of analysis of a team and a club and a manager and a bunch of players. Why I'm probably not as hard as you on them is that I don't think Pepe's that great. I don't know whether Ceballos is that great. Odegaard's looked okay. Aubameyang and Lacazette can be inconsistent. Chambers are right back. Okay. Tierney went off injured. That's a big loss. Gabriel, yeah. I just don't know whether he's working, Rob. And I know what you're saying. And maybe I just don't know whether he's playing with consistent players that will do it week in, week out. And whether it is his fault. If you had somebody else go in there with this group of players, which is the best way to try and think of whose fault it is, really, in inverted commas, you know, who could you have going there, Rob? Would Tuchel go in there and make a bunch of...
Would Angelotti they go in different? Would they look at the team different? Would they play the side differently? I don't know. And it is part of the questions. But I just think I just don't want there to be this, it's okay, whatever he does. It's okay, it's Arsenal. Yeah. Arsenal are 12, yeah. Arsenal are 13, it's okay. He's building. No, this is Arsenal Football Club. It should be building in the top half of the table and losing some games and not turning up against a Liverpool team that's not the Liverpool of last season. I just thought it was so flat. I was just disappointed, disappointed.
Listen, let's flip it over to Liverpool quick. And a couple of players that I think deserve special mention. Mm. First player is a really interesting one. Trent Alexander-Arnold left out of the recent England squad, World Cup qualifiers. A big, big question mark on whether he's going to get into Gareth Southgate's squad for the Euros. We had a chat about it on our NBC conference call on Thursday. We spoke with Lee Dixon, of course, who is the man for fullbacks, and Graham Rousseau, fullback conversation. And I sense from both of those, particularly Lee, that I don't think he's going to go.
He's on the outside, isn't he?
I made a point on the call, like, really? I mean, don't you think we need that quality against teams that's packing in against England, that forever in the all the tournaments I can remember that we've needed a bit of quality in certain situations? Wouldn't Trent Alexander-Arnold, if he doesn't start, and I get that, be an option? And Lee was like, are you gonna drop out? What's his name?
Reece James?
Reece James doing great. What's his name? Tottenham boy. That'll come to us. Mm-hmm. And apparently he's been the best player for Atletico Madrid.
Kieran Trippier.
and he's had a great season. You know, I think we all realize that Kyle Walker is just needed in the squad. He can play center back, his pace, et cetera, et cetera. So I get that. It's a difficult decision. I would take Trent Alexander-Arnold to the Euros. What about you?
I'd take Trent Alexander-Arnold for exactly the same thing. I understand some of his deficiencies in some games, and maybe some games when these wide players, when you want a more defensive outlook, you might go with Trippier or Walker if he's in the squad. But games when you have possession, games when you need to break teams down, games when you can play him higher up the pitch, and that's not to say that he can't defend, because he can defend. He's just got to have more concentration and be more dedicated to that side of his game. I just think he's too good a player, Rob, to leave at home and not be part of what you could do. And in a tournament, teams change, systems change, people get injured, you have to play different ways. Trent Alexander-Arnold, for me, is one of the best 24 players or 25 players in England that should be going to the Euros. But listen, Gareth took a stance, and it might be difficult for him now. And you're right. Yeah. There was a lot of attention on him this weekend, and I thought he performed well. He did his defensive side. He's always going to be one to get forward, but he did his defensive side when he had to and put in a brilliant ball for Diogo Jota's first game. It changes the game right there.
Jota, is he better than anybody thought? I mean, I think it raised a few eyebrows going to Liverpool, and I'd know what he'd done in the Championship. I saw what he'd done at Wolverhampton Wanderers. I didn't think he was this good and that impactful. I mean, this isn't where he started at the club. He started at the club, brilliant, got injured, come back again, brilliant. His goals per game ratio is brilliant. What a good signing and an important player, Rob, going forward for Liverpool, that front line.
Absolutely. I said, I think it was on the broadcast yesterday, a lot of talk about all the defenders and centre-backs they've lost. Van Dijk's probably the best in the league, Gomez and Matip. There's a lot of talk about Henderson and Fabinho being out and what they can't get the press and the intensity and their ability in front of the middle of the park. No one really talked about Diogo Jota's loss when the spark went out of the front line. And his ability, Rob, to play in any of the three positions, his ability to change the chemistry, to do it different, to make clever runs in behind, he's got a little bit of tenacity about him. I think people didn't really realise it. And it's shown just by coming on, the different spark slightly changed the system where there was a bit more of a 4-2-3-1 and he can play Firmino in a little bit more of a hole where he can play and do the things he likes to do. I think he's going to be as important as any Liverpool player between now and the end of the season, Diogo Jota. He just brought an energy back to Liverpool that was missing.
And scores different types of goals. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He seems to have scored a lot of headers.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not 6 feet tall. I mean, he's a small player, gets in good spots, tap-ins, great finishes. I mean, he just scores a ton of different types of goals. I mean, Salah scores a similar type of goal. So does Sadio Mane. Jota seems to be in the box more for different types of goals, which is great for Liverpool. It's important he's back.
Yeah.
Important Fabinho in midfield. It looks like that Phillips and Kabak have had some games, had some minutes.
Yeah, I just want to mention those two, Rob. I just think we should give those a look. They were my list. I had my list of three, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Diogo Jota, and I was in Kabak and Nat Phillips, by the way. I think it's 4 clean sheets in the last 5 games, or certainly since they played together. Done it in Europe, done it in the Premier League. I think Fabinho in front of them helps. They've grown a little bit together. I think it's important that, you know, they come together and kind of looking out for each other. And the biggest thing I would say is you're not noticing them so much now. I think before we were looking at Kabak and all his runs and his body position. Looks like he's just, you know, come to terms with the game and himself.
Still need to see more, Rob.
Absolutely.
But we've still got to see more, but good signs.
Confidence, good signs. And listen, it can't be easy going into a Champions side that's not playing well, that's low in confidence, that not, you know, having the threat that they had it before with the big names missing. So I just thought they deserved a little mention, actually, the two centre-backs, because when Kabak came in, we weren't too pleased with what we were seeing.
Where, just finally on this one, where the heck are we with Liverpool in the top four? I mean, like, it looked a couple of weeks ago, they got a right good chance, Rob, aren't they? They're sixth right now. They're just two points off.
2 points behind.
I mean, West Ham play tomorrow. But they're in with a great chance with Chelsea. And and Spurs as well. We'll get onto them. But they've got a good chance of making the top four, my friend, haven't they?
Big weekend this was for Liverpool. Not only getting the win, but the other teams around them not doing quite so well in that chase for the fourth spot. It's back on for Champions League football, and I'm sure that won't be lost on Jurgen Klopp.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Another team looking to get in the top four. Again, a team that looked like they were going to, then looked like they weren't going to do it. Spurs, Robbie Earl, 2-2 away at Newcastle United. This Spurs side, I mean...
Well, you just said early in your playing career you should have trouble with your back. Jose Mourinho's got trouble with his back. It's Spurs. Because there's no trust in them, Rob. They go 1-0 down. Harry Kane continues to just deliver for them, and like nothing else, he gets a couple of goals. He gets them ahead. And then against a Newcastle United team that supposedly dispirited, supposedly haven't got goal scorers, apparently, you know, unrest in the camp, get back into the game, create some chances, and end up getting an equaliser. And if you just looked at the equalising goal from Willock, I think it's Richie who puts a ball in from the left, no pressure as he puts it in. Joe Ellington wins a winner on header on the far post, no real challenge. The ball comes across, I think, whoever's in the middle of the pot. The two centre-backs run into each other, and Joe Willock comes through and finds the back of the net. I mean, it's like comedy of errors with the Spurs.
Yeah, and Mourinho said it afterwards, Rob. He said exactly the same thing, and he didn't want to call out players to the lady, I think it was interviewing him. But basically what he's saying, reading between the lines, is, listen, we make a lot of mistakes. And basically, I mean, he's tried different players back there, Rob. I mean, it's almost a totally different back four from your Alderweireld and your Dyers and your Serge Aurier's and your Doherty's. And I think he's basically saying, I need better defenders. Now, it's a little rich, given how happy he was with the squad, given that he has spent money and he has brought in defenders, Reguilon, Rodon brought in. It's like that he needs more now. One small note, Rob, and I didn't mention it on the broadcast. I'm sure we had time, but I thought they looked okay in the first half. There was a tactical change. Vinicius came off and Heung-min Son went up front. Midfield changed. The shape of the team kind of changed, and they never looked comfortable with it in the second half. First half is kind of 4-4-2.
Yeah.
You know, those wide players come in a little bit and they play in the spaces a little bit. And I thought they looked okay. That all changed. And they never really got to grips with it. And, of course, there's going to be moments where their star players, Harry Kane, again, of course, will just score for you.
Yeah.
Gets a couple of goals for him. He's top of the charts now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's top of the charts. Yeah.
But the need to rely on the defensive side for Spurs is ever critical, because Tottenham don't defend with the ball like other teams do, like Liverpool do, like Man City do, like other teams do. They don't. Jose relies on his team to defend at times when there's a one goal difference. And I'm afraid this season has shown that he's done that at his peril. They've lost points.
But if that's the way he's going to go, Rob, and you say that's a tactic, because I heard another interview where he was asked about, you know, one of the great things that you used to have, Jose, was with a lead, you could defend it. And he basically said, yeah, same tactic, different players. Basically saying, so based on that and based on what you're saying, it would seem then for Spurs to be successful under Mourinho, he's got to go and buy a set of defenders that he can rely on. Experienced, probably 25, 26, 27, probably 40, 50, 60 million dollars. So he needs $250 to sort out his defense. And then he's got to work out if his goalkeeper in that time is going to be the right goalkeeper as well. That's beyond what he does at the top end or anywhere else.
He's got the players he wants in midfield, hasn't he? He brought in Højbjerg, who's done well. He can play in there, Sissoko, for more protection. That's his protection part. And if you're going to want players better than Davinson Sanchez and Aldo Vareld and Serge Aurier and whoever else.
Yeah, they're going to come. They're 45, 50 million upwards.
You know, and also thing he said about afterwards about his grey hair and stuff, and he was saying, I'm not used to this, as if like the teams I've managed before don't make
been doing
mistakes.
It by the yeah.
This is what happens, Jose, when you go and
this
manage
is Tottenham.
Team. Not near the top of the league that you take over. This Inter was Real Madrid or this Chelsea. This needs a little bit more coaching, a bit more teamwork and stuff. And sadly, right now, it seems like he isn't able to do that. All that being said, my friend, they're still banging it.
Yeah,
they're still
two points behind.
They still chance, which I find incredibly hard to believe. But all those teams in those spots are struggling, and Jose's no different. Just on the Harry Kane, Rob, before. You know, there's a lot of talk about Kane and what he might do in the summer.
But
I feel like the season is absolutely in the balance with Spurs in terms of where they go from here. Yeah. What happens to the manager? What happens to Harry Kane? Bale. Jermaine Sanchez on a contract. Dele Alli. You're always dependent on a League Cup final and a run in the Premier League. If they don't win the League Cup final against Man City, which is probable, and they don't finish in the top four, where are we with the manager, Rob? And where are we with Harry Kane?
Well, where are we with Daniel Levy? Is Daniel Levy the kind of chairman who goes, okay, Jose, we've not won the League Cup. We've got out the Europa League. We are not in the top four, let's just say.
So
and I'm going worst case scenario, fifth. Here's 250 million, go again, and let's keep everybody. Don't think he's that guy, Rob. Don't think he's that guy. You're right in that there's a bit of a tipping point for Spurs right now in terms of the League Cup being put back, delayed, has almost put things on hold, because normally at this time of season we'd know if you've won the League Cup or not. So that winning a trophy for Spurs would be either done or not. We're still waiting for that till at the end of this month. We'll find out whether he can beat Manchester City. The Harry Kane thing I think is big, and I don't think it's as easy as he's one of their own. He's a Spurs legend. He wants to be. I totally get that, but I still think there'll be thoughts. I think there'll be conversations about the next stage of his career, and is he going to win enough silverware? Is he got the opportunity to go to clubs where he could win silverware? Gareth Bale looks like the talk seems like he's going back to Real Madrid. Jose Mourinho, Robbie Musto. Unless he wins the League Cup, I see a divorce in the ranks.
Yeah.
I see a divorce in the ranks.
I don't. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Spurs won't win the League Cup final. And if they don't, as I've just said, finish fifth, Harry Kane is going to be incredibly expensive. At this time, at his age, with Daniel Levy negotiating a deal, I don't see a team paying the money required, which is going to be well into the $100-something million for Harry Kane this summer. Just through the pandemic, I don't see it. I think Daniel Levy's invested time and money in Jose Mourinho. I think he'll continue. I think he'll continue with Jose and back him with some more money to give him more time, Rob. If you're going to go down the Jose Mourinho road, right?
Yeah.
At the end of that road, you've got to be sure that, okay, it hasn't worked. And I don't think Daniel Levy will feel in the summer, even if they don't get any silverware and finish fifth, I don't feel that he's at the end of that road. I think he will give Jose another window in the summer, another season, unless it goes bad, because I think Kane will end up staying because of the money needed in these difficult times to buy him. And with Levy saying, listen, he's got three more years on his contract, pay us 150 or whatever it is, million dollars or pounds, it's a big number. I don't think anybody's going to pay it. I think that's what's going to happen at the football club, in my opinion.
It's interesting, and obviously the finances in football are being looked at and they're very different. I just think for the type of striker that Kane is, the guarantee of goals that he brings you, somebody will pay that money. I think you pay that money for those very, very few players in world football. And Harry Kane, for me, is in that bracket. Whether he stays at Spurs, whether they put a price on him that's too much, we'll wait and see. But definitely going to be an interesting end to the season for Spurs. And obviously, can Jose Mourinho turn things around? Before we move on, mate, and I'd be remiss of me not to go for my underappreciated player of the week, is Joe Ellington, my friend.
Oh, blimey.
Joe Ellington, just bear with me for a moment. So, ridiculed really since his move, not been a prolific goal scorer, plays sometimes on the right or left-hand side. He's a big guy. He looks a bit like he hasn't quite got his coordination right. But I'll tell you what, in difficult times, Rob, he's played positions where it's not his best, but he's played for the team. I look at some players around the league and I don't see them giving the same effort. He came up with important goal against Spurs. He headed back for the equalising goal. He made a nuisance of himself. Had one or two opportunities, and part of the Joe Ellington thing is also a little bit of a tip to Steve Bruce in the group, because the narrative was written that, you know, Spurs beat Newcastle, Fulham get a win against Villa, Fulham go out the bottom three, Newcastle drop in, and then that's the end of Newcastle. And it's easy as a player to get caught in that, and, oh, this is us, and woe is me. And fair, they played with spirit today, they played with a bit of drive. Joe Ellington got his goals, and I just thought, you know what, for a time, let's give a bit of love to Joe Ellington and Stevie Bruce. And you know what, Jose Mourinho could do worse than buy Joe Ellington and his Tottenham team. Maybe he'd do him a job.
Good shout, man. Well sold on Joe Ellington, and you're right, I think. Sometimes you've got to get a little bit of credit. Also, good news for Newcastle. Alan Saint-Maximin came into the game, Rob, back from injury. Wilson's not far away. He has a good point against Spurs for belief and for everything else.
It was a big momentum weekend for Newcastle, wasn't it? Big momentum. Obviously, Fulham not winning and them getting a point against Spurs. Let's talk about Manchester United, my friend, because remember the reverse game of this was the 3-2, the late penalty for Bruno Fernandes. Brighton played particularly well first half. United came back. So Manchester United started the game well, Rob. Cavani up top with Rashford and Greenwood either side of Bruno Fernandes. Pogba next to Fred in the normal back four. The big call was Dean Henderson was in goal, and we'll talk about that. But United started well and then kind of lost their way. Brighton got back into the game, scored a lovely goal from Danny Welbeck. And first off, we're starting to think, is it another one of those United days?
It was, and it was another one of those United days where they don't do themselves justice in the first 45 minutes. I have the numbers here. They had three shots, none on target. Brighton had five shots, three on target. Mm. And Brighton forced five corners to United's one. So the numbers, the data and facts, you know, kind of backed up. United started well, but then drifted away. But they have got the ability to turn it on again. And they piled on the pressure in the second half. The goals came. Bruno Fernandes involved again. Marcus Rashford took his goal really, really well. And Mason Greenwood, of players that I want to mention today of looking sharp again, is Mason Greenwood. And I think everybody probably will be disappointed with Greenwood's progression this season.
Yeah.
The season before, I remember saying, wow, this kid's going to score more goals than Rashford and Martial next season. He hasn't. And it hasn't been a great season for him. But the last few weeks, you know, from that right-hand side, he just looks more confident, lively, fitter. I don't know what's going on, you know, outside of Old Trafford or whatever, but I think he got his goal today, a kind of a scrappy little header goal. Great, great. It's the winning goal. I thought he looked better. And United have the ability, Rob, to step it up through the gears a little bit. They just do have that ability. They've got special players that can do special things. And it wasn't today. It wasn't a moment. You know, sometimes I criticise United that, you know, they rely on moments from their star player to do something to get results. It really, it wasn't really one moment today. It was a better second half team performance, piling on the pressure, a little bit of quality told today. So, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is criticised sometimes for the way that they play. Didn't look particularly creative in the first half, but they find ways, Rob. They find ways to performances to get the goals, and a deserved 3 points.
I had a really interesting argument this week, Rob, that I thought was something that I'd just bring up in terms of, isn't perception such a big thing in football? There was an argument, I heard a discussion, I'd say, about an argument this week about managers, and somebody was talking about this game and saying, you know, Graham Potter, you know, is loved, isn't he? He's kind of, people are really starting to appreciate what he does and how he does it. And Ollie's almost at the other end of the scale because he's at Man United and not. And listen, Ollie's, I don't think, ever going to be the Pep Guardiola of football in the way that he plays. But he's going to do it a certain way. He's there's progression at the football club. Today, as you say, was a not brilliant performance, but a decent win. We used to have those days under Sir Alex Ferguson. It's just that people don't choose to remember them. There were days when United weren't brilliant. Well, I've played against days when United weren't brilliant, but beat us 3-1, and you go, they were just better than us. And in the end today, I think they were just better than Brighton, a Brighton team that play well, are well-organised, are well-coached, but eventually Manchester United got more quality in the right areas of the pitch, and so they won the game. And I just think it's one of those sometimes where Ollie's always going to be slightly underappreciated, probably been, you know, never win our underappreciated manager of the week. But listen, credit where credit's due. He's got the points. They're 60 points now, Rob. Right sitting behind Man City. And look like they've almost, a couple more wins, and they've almost cemented their place in the top four.
Well, you think about it, right? Big picture. Second best team in English football right now. Second best team.
Yeah.
With obvious spots that need upgrading. Mm-hmm. Centre-back, centre midfield player, a striker, and maybe a right winger. Four players there. Now, whether they get to many of those in the summer, they'll try and get to a couple of them, maybe. But it's not a bad place to start, Rob, is it? Second best with obvious spots to improve. That's got to be encouraging for United fans. And maybe, you know, the whole package might come when they do upgrade in two or three spots and they start to see the whole thing come together, more consistency, more dominance, better possession, maybe. But I think it's pretty obvious to get to the very, very top, which is only one level right now. They need some new positions. But given what they've got, listen, you can't ask for much more when we look at a Man City side that's as good as it's looked for a long, long time. So far, so good for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how they finish off the season and what money is available to add to those spots that need updating.
Two quick thoughts before we move on. I was watching Yves Bissouma today, Rob, and I was thinking, God, he'd do well in that Reading Man United. As much as I love Fred and have said in the past, every team needs a Fred, I'd swap my Fred for an Yves. Cool, he's a player, mate. I'd swap him tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. I would too. I still think Declan Rice is such a...
I mean, that's tough to achieve, but I think that's...
Yeah, it's big money.
That's big money, isn't it? That's up near the 100.
If you've got the money and you want an almost guaranteed excellent performer for many, many years, for me, the drive is personal. We spoke to him on a special pub like a week ago. I mean, I know it's big money, but I tell you what, as a almost a lock-in of a good performer for many years, he's worth it for me.
It's interesting to say that, and I was just thinking about, I was trying to think, who could he be for United? And people, listen, he'd have a lot to do and he'd have a long way to go, but he could be a Roy Keane-esque signing for Man United. Driver, ability, and can play, and he'll nick an odd goal for you, but he could be that guy for 10 years in the middle of the park. Yep. But as you say, I mean, that's fancy football stuff, and I'm sure United fans will look at that. Just got to mention, Rob, which was the big kind of question mark at the start of this game. Everybody was talking about it. De Gea was back. He's, you know, free from quarantine. He's been in Spain. Obviously, his girlfriend's just had their first baby. He was fit and able to play. So was Dean Henderson, who was going to be starting in goal. Dean Henderson got the nod, which I said in this situation for me puts him as the current number one in the football club. I also suggest that it's possibly Ollie getting a good look at Henderson and deciding, is he my guy next season to take us on? Or does De Gea come back, or do I need to get someone? I think it's a bit of a trial for Henderson. Based on that, what do you think? Is it right? Do you feel that he's ready to take over from De Gea?
Okay, so I got several thoughts here. The first thing I want to say is that we have heard lots of reports in recent weeks that Man United are looking at top-class goalkeepers. It's like, why? You've got two really great ones there in De Gea and Dean Henderson. Why is there so many strong reports of United looking for a new goalkeeper? We know his girlfriend in Spain lives in Spain. Yeah. We know he went over and spent some time with his new baby girl. A few years ago, he wanted to go back to Spain. Is there something brewing there? And if there is something brewing there, I understand the Dean Henderson. You know what? Looks like David's going to maybe wants to go back to Spain or leave the club. Let's get Henderson in charge. The next thing I want to say is, in my opinion right now, David De Gea is a better goalkeeper. He's a better goalkeeper. I've yet to be convinced that Dean Henderson, Rob, is ready to say, look, you know, I'm a better goalkeeper. Now, he could grow, and his age helps him, of course. And I just, if there's a number, I still am a big fan of David De Gea, Robbio. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm a big fan of De Gea. And if you're going to, unless there's a story going on about him maybe leaving at the end of the season, which is, it is speculation.
Yeah, yeah.
Be surprised if Henderson proves to be better than David De Gea. Again, I know De Gea's made mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced when I see Dean Henderson again today. A couple of nervy crosses. He dropped the ball. He got away with it.
Yeah, he's not clean.
It's just a different player for Man United with a scrutiny of 77,000 or whatever it is to put pressure on him. I'm yet to be convinced, but I guess the manager, I mean, you might be right. Maybe it's a trial of, is he up to it?
Yeah.
And that might decide how we go in the summer, whether it is a new goalkeeper or whether it's just like, he is going to be my preferred choice. But I think that he's not yet as good as De Gea.
I think, you know what, it's one of the toughest positions to go into at big clubs. And I'd love to, at some point, we'll get Tim Howard on a podcast and we'll maybe talk this a little bit further. But I was thinking, so, you know, you've got a Chelsea spotlight on you. You've got to be good from the start. Maybe Petr Cech is a great example of that and then have a great career. You've got Man United. You know, we've seen between sort of Schmeichel and Van der Sar, that the goalkeepers that came in, including Aaron and Tim Howard, you know, going in at Man United, it's not just how good you are with your hands and your saves and you think, it's your head as well. And the one thing they won't know with Dean Henderson, Rob, based on if this is the trial, and we don't particularly know what's in all this head, but let's say it's a trial between now and the end of the season. No fans changes the whole thing.
Changes everything, yeah.
Home and away for Dean Henderson when you're Manchester United. When you're at home, these 70,000 people who are willing you well, but if you start dropping a few balls and that, you'll hear it. If you're away from home and the fans start thinking, oh, he's a dodgy keeper, it all starts. There's more to just being, you know, good with your hands and how many saves you make and how you kick to be Manchester United's number one. And that's the bit I'm not sure with Dean Henderson. I'm not sure how, it may be his time that we find out. I think those are the indicators that are going to be difficult to attain between now and the end of the season.
I think what you're talking about, Rob, just to finish up on this, you know, you think of Peter Schmeichel. Yeah. Talk about a personality that's like, come on then, I'm going to be larger than life. I'm going to dominate. I mean, Van der Sar was a great goalkeeper as well. It's slightly different, well, a big difference in personality. But Dean Henderson, he looks like he's got an opportunity, my friend, an opportunity. Yeah.
It's in your hands, Dean. Don't drop it.
It's literally in his hands. So good luck to him. Absolutely good luck to him.
Let's talk about probably one of the most disappointing results today, and it was for Fulham. I think there was a real feel-good factor around Fulham and what Scotty's done ahead of the break. And they get themselves one up, Mitrovic back into the team and scores a goal. And I know you said at times you're a little bit surprised he's not been used more this season, often on the bench and not always been involved in the first team. Fulham get up, and I thought we used a great word today. It was low. Fear struck them. Fear of winning hurt Fulham today. And it's the first time I've seen it for a while. And I think Scott said, he alluded to it after, I've got a bit of work to do, and that wasn't a good look from us, that when we got 1-0 up, we didn't really know how to handle it.
It's game management, Robert, he said in his interview. Game management, you know, we didn't do great. He didn't like the way, which is what his words were, didn't like the way they lost today. And he talked about game management. And we were saying, Rob, in the studio, that it must be one of the hardest things as a manager of a team, particularly at this very high level, where you want them to react in certain ways in certain situations.
Yeah.
And given 1-0 up with like half an hour to go, like it looked like they were just, oh, wow, this is so great. Like this is going to be a massive 3 points. We can catch Newcastle United, get out of the relegation zone. And they stopped playing and invited pressure from Aston Villa, who, to be fair, raised their game in the second half. Because they had a fourth, kept on as a star player and got a couple of goals. But Fulham, it's hard to manage every scenario. And I don't know what the answer is there, whether he coaches the players in certain situations. I want you to do this, or, yeah. or if you're winning with a certain amount of time, still play, still be expansive, make runs in behind, let's go forward, let's push up, whatever it is, the management was lacking a little bit. And I thought that was quite a damaging result today, Rob. Yeah. There's a danger that Fulham's momentum of the last, what, 2 or 3 months and good performances, they've had a tough run of games, by the way. I think they've lost 3 of the last 4, but they've
yeah,
had some...
Yeah, lost 3 of 4. They're good away from home when they're beating an 8 on the way, yeah.
Four of the last five now, but there's some tough games there, but it eats away. And that today, look at the body language of the players coming off the pitch. They were pretty distraught.
Yeah.
An opportunity lost to catch Newcastle United. And, you know, if you look at the table, Rob, they've got 26 points. They've won 5 games from 31. I don't know whether they've got it in them. I don't know whether they've got it in them to get the points. Newcastle are 3 points ahead plus a game in hand. I don't know whether Fulham have got it in, them, Rob.
He's got a big job now. He's got to go. They've almost got to go again. There's 7 games and he's got to go again. And you're right. There was a couple of things we were talking about, you know, because I've been in those situations. And I just remember back to the days when we played, we used to have a sort of strategy for 1-0 up, and we often have quick forwards and sometimes just put it over the top and say, let them have a race. And we push up the team and we get solid. And those things used to come back to me as like, 1-0 up, this is what we're doing. Everybody knew what we're doing. And the other thing that we had, Rob, that was interesting, that I think Lee Dixon was talking about it today, you know, people on the pitch communicating. We had a lot of talkers in our team. And it was almost like we talked to each other about what we need to do as the ball went up. Come on, let's push up. Come on, you go over to the right. There was always information being passed around the team as our game manager. That's how we managed games. Yeah. We kind of kept on to each other. And sometimes we'd give each other a little rocket. Oh, come on, put your foot in. And that was how we did it. I look at the Scots team and I think somehow he's got to find his way. And I'm not saying he does what we do, and that's a little bit kind of basic from back in the day. But you've got to find a way that the players can take a little bit of ownership and get through those difficult times, because hopefully they're 1-0 up in games to come. They've got to find a way to make sure they at least keep it clean, if not get the second goal.
I want to get a one-word answer on you in a minute about Fulham. Just quickly on Villa, Jack Grealish was a big loss. The expectation was, well, he has been training. The club of Fulham, been training. He felt his calf shin problem, yesterday, and Dean Smith says, I don't know how long he's going to be. Really awful news for the player, for the club, for the England national team, with the Euros coming up. What a bad time for a setback for that player, Rob. But to be fair to Villa, much better in the second half.
Much better second half. Ollie Watkins got his goal. He needed that as his first in 8, I think, from him. So, yeah, good goal.
Fulham, staying up. Yes.
I'm afraid no. I'm afraid no, Rob. Just not momentum. Today was huge. Momentum, winning games, you know, Newcastle getting a point, the game. I feel for them, and I hope they're still in there. I hope we get to Newcastle in the last game at the Cottage and they're still in with a chance. But if I was a betting man now, Rob, seeing what I saw, knowing how the dressing would be, it's tough ask now for Fulham to stay up.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're just gonna fall short. Newcastle, Wilson coming back, you know, their attacking guys are back again, a little bit of momentum at the key period of the season. I think that's going to be the same as well. Okay. Okay, Rob.
Let's get through these. Yeah, good looking game, wasn't it? This one at the KP, Leicester, Man City. Leicester beat Man City 5-2 in the reverse fixture and showed that possibly that was the way to play against City. So, a bit of anticipation in this one again. City had their football, had the possession, couldn't really break through and create too many chances in the first half. But as ever, football finds a way. And they find a way. And they've got Kevin De Bruyne, who's on a different level. However you defensively set up, I was thinking about this last night. However you defensively, however hard you work, you can't legislate for a player of that ability. He can break down the defence, doing something, seeing a pass, making a run. His technique can just find a way, Rob, that disarms you.
No, I mean, we're not saying anything new here or different here. It's just, it is breathtaking. Some of the football that we're lucky enough to see with this guy. And he's one of those players that I do think that we're lucky enough now to enjoy this footballer and the artistry that he brings to the Man City side and his passing range, et cetera, et cetera. You don't, you, that, You know, we've played in it. We've been watching it now for many, many years, Rob. Yeah. You don't get many like this. No. You don't get many players with that sort of ability, because that's the beautiful side of the game, isn't it? The through balls and the crosses and some of his goals. So, and again, it almost gets monotonous talking about how good he was.
But I don't think I still think when you've got one like that, Rob, you see Messi's and Ronaldo's and quite saying he's right at that level yet, but he ain't far off. And we've got one in our league, and Manchester City have got one, and you should never tire of talking about that, because that's what the pinnacle of football is about.
Other thing I want to mention with Man City, Rob, and we know about their rotations, and heavily rotated team again. Yeah. This time, Benjamin Mendy that creates that first goal in the 59th minute. Another thing I thought, I know City, like, we wouldn't talk about them being physical and powerful, but how about have a look at their team? How about this for power? Benjamin Mendy, Laporte, Diaz, Walker, Fernandinho, Rodri. There's some size there. There's some height
at the back. Certainly at the back,
Yeah, and the two boys in midfield, Rodri and Fernandinho.
Yeah.
That's a powerful, big side. You know, if Pep wants to, for whatever reason, go with some of those guys against some of the teams maybe in the Premier League, he can absolutely do it. And I think there was one moment when Ruben Diaz defended and got a block. And
yeah, against Tielemans with the breakaway.
Yeah. I mean, it's right there. Yeah. They've got a guy back there now that will die to flip and make clean sheets and make defensive. I think I said on one pod, Rob, that Pep always seems to have a heroic defender. It was Carles Puyol at Barcelona. Of course, Vincent Kompany earlier at City did not the last couple of seasons.
And
I think it's making all the difference. So another important mention of Ruben Diaz, but just the power, the strength, the versatility, you know, of this team, and against a good Leicester side, comfortable City 2-0. That's how good they are. They can win difficult games.
Clean sheets, goals, different people.
Yeah,
I'll tell you as well. A couple of things. So we'll quickly move on. But two things I just wanted to mention. Fernandinho, I think he's coming up to Oscar season soon. Should be in there for an Oscar, by the way. And I say this as a biggest compliment. He's the best actor at pretending he's injured when he tactically fouls somebody to stop the play in the league, bar none. He's a master at it. He did it 3 or 4 times against Leicester, and then the referee doesn't book him. He doesn't get a yellow card. The referee looks at him, and it's great game management. It's great tactical understanding, and he does
Isn't it cheating?
No, it's not cheating. Because it's down to the referee. He does it in front of the referee, and then he pretends he's not done it, or he pretends he's injured, or he pretends it was a collision and it was accidental.
Should we be celebrating a player that's flipping?
I'm not saying, Rob, this is game management. The thing, I'm saying it's game management. I'm saying it's what Fulham lack. I'm saying it's understanding that sometimes you do that. And listen, if he gets a yellow card, very rarely does he get sent off. Very rarely does he get a second, so he puts him on course.
He knows
what he's doing, and you need that in your team. That's what winners have in your team. And I'm not saying it in a way like we should be celebrating it. It's just that he does it with such guile and understanding and knows what he's doing. And that's what, you know, for all the De Bruyners and that, you need a bit of that Fernandinho as well when you win, isn't it? And I like that. Just before we move on this one, mate, and talk about City against Dortmund in the Champions League coming up, obviously tasty for this week. Sergio Aguero, we got the news, didn't we, this week that his contract's running out in the summer. It's not being renewed. He's going to leave the football club. It was a bit, you know, there's been a lot of talk about where he's going to go. Is the suitors in the Premier League? Is he going back to Spain? Maybe Italy, even back to Argentina, Independiente, where he started. Tip of the hat to Sergio Aguero, I think, just in terms of what he's done, what he's brought to the Premier League. Where do you see him going?
I don't really care, Rob. He's been so good. He can go anywhere. There's nothing going to change my appreciation of this player. He might be in the Premier League. He might go back to Spain. Let's talk about him going back to Spain. I don't know where he's going to go. I think we saw this coming, didn't we, a little bit? About
you certainly read it early. I still thought there might be another year in him. But
yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to spend too much time, Rob. I think everybody knows what he's done for the game. Not just the moment, the first Man City title, the Aguero goal, the amount of goals, the highest scoring foreign player the most hat-tricks in the league. There's a ton of them. I remember, mate, I before I worked on the Premier League, I worked on La Liga, and I remember watching Sergio Kun Aguero play for Atletico Madrid, and in commentary, I remember saying, wow, this guy, he would be brilliant. I'd love to see him in the Premier League. I would love to see this guy in the Premier League. And I'm so pleased that that happened. I said the same thing, by the way, about Edinson Cavani, which we didn't see in his prime, but we did see Sergio Aguero come to the Premier League. And he was all that I ever thought he would be, powerful, quick, and skillful. Skillful, creative, a finisher. He has been magnificent. And you know, it's sad in some ways, but that's football. And
he moves on.
Where he's going to pop up, but I'm sure he'll decide where he goes, and he's earned that kind of, I don't know, he's earned the ability to select his next club, but he's been a legend in the Premier League.
And I guarantee there'll be goals wherever he goes. Just for me, just on it, I think he makes the hardest thing in the game, and it is scoring goals, looking. Yeah. And that's the biggest compliment I can give him. I think he's underrated. Don't think he's quite ever got the accolades of like a Thierry Henry or Eric Cantona, or some of these, Dennis Bergkamp. Not often been in the player of the year. Maybe because he doesn't speak English. Maybe because we don't seem to know him as a personality as well. Yeah. I don't know if all that plays. But, yeah, I'm with you in terms of one of the very, very best and has deserved whatever move he wants to make. To get that. Just going to some odds, mate. Our friends at PointsBet Sportsbook have given us the latest odds, and this is only on the first leg. So Dortmund on Tuesday. So Man City to win is minus 260. The draw is plus 400. And a Dortmund win in the first leg is plus 675. So heavy, heavy favourites that City get the job done in the first leg and then don't have too much trouble going to Germany. Do you see it that big?
I do, I think, yeah. I think I do. I mean, the draw at plus 400 maybe is some decent value. We know about Dortmund and who plays for them and the certain striker for Borussia Dortmund and a few other star players. But they're not having a great time in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
They're outside the top four right now. It looks like they could miss out on that, and Erling Haaland might hasten his departure from the football club if they're not playing Champions League football next week. But that's going to be the fascinating part, and the improvement in Man City, you've said it a million times, is a defensive side of the game for this season. They're going to get tested. They're going to get tested against a striker that is absolutely on fire at the moment. But we'll get a little look at Erling Haaland and what he can do against a team that is purring right now and with defenders that are right on their game. But I would back Man City. I think they are strong favourites. Maybe a draw is decent value with these particular odds.
Yeah, I think maybe a draw where the value is. But City, the way they're playing and the amount of, I mean, the options they've got is just ridiculous. We'll want to probably get the job done in the first leg. Just a couple of other results from this weekend. Southampton 3, Burnley 2, Nathan Redmond coming up with a winning goal. Good result for Southampton, gives them breathing space now into 13th. Still a little bit of work for Burnley to do, but you just think with the way they play and Sean Dyche. It was a good game, this one, I thought, particularly. First game of the weekend. And Leeds United 2, Sheffield United 1, another defeat for Sheffield United. Goal for Jack Harrison, own goal from Jagielka was enough to give Leeds the result. And those two wide players from Leeds, Rob, Rafinha one side, Harrison another, been real good players. And, you know, I was watching that game early this weekend and just thinking, so good to have Leeds in the league, isn't it? They just bring something different.
People don't know much about Leeds. They ain't seen nothing yet. They ain't seen nothing until they see Ellen Road packed with fans, and actually away from home as well. One of the most passionate sets of fans in English football you'll ever see. So that's, fingers crossed, Rob, we get to see that next season. They're going to be in the league next season. Yeah. They're going to be as thrilling, I assume, under Marcelo Bielsa. But with the added attraction of Leeds United with those fans, it's going to make the Premier League better, both on the field and in the Oops, my little speaker's popped out of my ear. But no, that's what people haven't realised yet, the size of the passion of the support of Leeds United. And hopefully we'll see it next season.
Absolutely. Exciting times ahead. It's been an exciting weekend, mate. That's most of match week 30 in the bag. Two wins for the Manchester Club. City take a big step towards the title. United get the 60 points and look like they've got a big hold on second. Chelsea had a pretty off day against Sam's Baggies. And Liverpool, they beat the Gunners in the big game at the Etihad. We'll be back on Wednesday, April the 7th. We're going to recap the Champions League games. And we've got a special guest to look out for, Mel D. Cole, who's a photographer. He's going to discuss an exciting project for the Chelsea supporters here in the US. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musto, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe. Be healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night. Good night.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.